Welcome to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Anna Page. And we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West.
The Yellowstone Art Museum's 51st annual art auction features some of the most vibrant contemporary art in the region. Museum director Brian Nicely tells us about what we can expect from the show.
Glad to have you here, Brian. Pretty exciting. Headed into the 51st auction, that's quite a lot of years to be doing this.
It is a long time.
But you've only been here a year.
That's right. This is actually my anniversary.
New for you. Well, welcome. On the anniversary of being in Billings, we're happy to have you overseeing this art auction. Now, tell me a little bit about what changes you might have added to the auction, especially since it's more than 5 decades old. I bet you're changing things up a bit.
Yes, we actually opened with a new event to try to pull in newer, younger people who are art collectors or just starting to be art collectors, and that was on January 25th. And that was really a means to sort of spread out the event and not to take away from the actual auction itself, but to create another opportunity for people to get in and experience art.
Oh. And I love the idea of that. I have always gone to the art auction. I'm a collector. I'm a big fan of the art museum. But the truth is, it sells out all the time.
Yes, it does.
It's a little bit expensive for some people. So you added an event to really make it more accessible?
Correct. And I think, you know, that's one way to look at it is, you know, a lot of people come to the art auction, they see, you know, expensive pieces being sold in the live auction, and they wonder, what's for me? And this new event was really for them. It was really giving them an opportunity to buy affordable artwork and really help them to understand how to begin a collection.
Now, part of the annual events, you'll have a quick draw. And for those who might not be familiar, what is a quick draw and how is this used in an auction format to attract a new audience?
Right. Well, quick draw really means quick finish. Unless an artist is able to do their work in a matter of 2 hours, and some are, this is an opportunity for an artist to start a work and then to finish it in the 2 hours while the public is there watching. Oh. And then you can bid on those items for the January 25th. There was a silent auction, and for the actual event on March 9th, it will be a live auction event. And we had lots of great artists. I know you'll recognize the names like Sonia Craywood, Mike Caskey, Lewis Habeck, and several others. And then the night of March 9th, we will have Ben Pease, Sheila Miles, Mike Clark, Allen, Noses Gunn, and Loretta Domenesky.
Oh, awesome. And Ben Pease is your artist in residence. He's there at the studio for a full year residency and pretty excited that he's going to be part of this auction. Can you explain a little bit more about that artist in residence program?
Sure. We have an artist in residence right now, Ben Pease, as you mentioned, and he's going to be in the art studio in the vault for a year. And the way our artist in residence program works, artists can apply every year, and then we usually bring somebody in late in the fall, and you can be in residence for 3 months up to a year. And it really provides an artist an opportunity to focus on their work. Some artists don't have a large studio space, or they might be working out of a room in their house. And this really gives them a standalone space and time to actually focus on their work, maybe work on a special collection, and or then figure out how to interact that collection with the museum on Art Walk, for example.
So, Anna, I think we need to instigate a poet-in-residence program.
I would love to see writing-residence programs. I think that I run into people all the time interested in finding a little bit of time and space to create, whether you're a writer or an artist, and in spending some time with Ben and some of your former artists-in-residence, what they're able to do in that space, to not only stretch their legs, but to be in a dedicated space to art, is pretty astounding. And it's really a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for many artists to grow their craft. And I've seen Ben grow as an artist, and his work is becoming more and more prolific. It's becoming distributed on a national scale, and he's really getting a lot of attention. And I think now that he has this space, you see him creating a ton more work.
Yeah, and he is there a lot, which is really exciting for us because you can really see his creativity coming to work every day.
And it's a beautiful space. Well, I mean, those gorgeous lights from the southwest, the windows. Right. So it's a really beautiful space. Now, can people go to the vault and sort of see what's going on?
Yeah, part of the way the artist residency program is set up, so anyone who's visiting the museum during normal business hours can check out a key card and go over and visit the vault. And then Ben will be there working at least 50% of the time the museum is actually open, so you can pop in and check out what he's working on in his studio.
That's awesome. And lots of younger students get a chance to access him and chat with him and see that, you know, it's really possible to do art as a living full time. So that's exciting. And it seems like this year, with the art auction and just with the Yellowstone Art Museum in general, there's a lot of younger artists getting involved. Is that true?
Yeah, we actually did a concerted effort this year to really look at who the favorites were in the auction in the past years, but really to go out and try to find newer, younger, emerging artists, not just necessarily right here in Billings, but in our region. And I think we were very successful. We probably have at least 10 to 12 new, young, emerging artists in the auction this year. And I think the patrons who come in will find that very exciting as well.
I also think it's interesting because the appeal of different age demographics. So that if you are starting a collection, you may be interested in somebody that's doing younger work that you relate to in a different way, as opposed to someone that has already an established art collection and they may be looking for one piece by a Ted Waddell or a Joss DeWeese or somebody. So the idea of nurturing not only the artists, but the people that are buying work.
Yeah, and I think that's a key point. I mean, some people have, you know, curated their collections such a long time. And sometimes, you know, collectors will get, I don't want to say stagnant, but they will get stagnant in what they have on their walls and they want to go to another level. And I think by bringing in newer, younger artists, because you can always tell the newer works are always influenced by older masters. And so I think you can see that crossover and what the new artists are doing. And sometimes that's a good way for someone to embellish their collection they already have.
What are some of the more important pieces in the auction? I suppose that they all have their own value and weight. What stands out to you this year?
Well, asking me my favorite piece is like, who's my favorite child? But I think it's important to know, you know, last year we celebrated the 50th anniversary with a major work by Pablo Picasso. And we have to say that he's coming back this
Woo-hoo!
Year. So we have works in the live auction by Pablo Picasso, Salvador Dali, Alexander Calder, Larry Pirney, Ben Pease, of course, Nelchi, Ira Raines, Michel Desroches, Rudy Audio, Ted Waddell, and Kevin Redstar, just to name a few of the rock stars.
How fun to hear Kevin Redstar, Nelchi, Ben Pease in the same sentence as Salvador Dali and Picasso.
Exactly.
And a couple of those first guys I don't think are living.
Well, they're not, no. So that is the exception. We had some very generous donations from galleries this year to help us provide income through this fundraiser for the museum.
Yeah, how do you get your hands on a Salvador Dali?
It's not easy. I mean, it's just one of those things where someone might be trading something or they're actually going out to market and they want to, like you said, somebody has a very long tenured collection in their house and they want to upgrade. So they decide to sell them through a gallery. Those galleries have the opportunity to take those to market or to donate them. And we've been very lucky both last year and this year that we now have two galleries that are willing to do that.
To donate.
Yes.
So, fabulous.
So the bigger pieces that I mentioned, Picasso, the Dali, the Calder, the Desroches, and the Ira Raines were 100% donations this year.
Oh, that must be a great addition to the bottom line.
It is, believe me.
So not only do you have big names, you have some big art in the auction this year, which I'd love. When I think of major work, I'm not always talking about the name, but the physical side. So you have some very large pieces this year.
Yeah, I think the patrons are going to be very happy when they see not only the names we have, but the scale of the work we have, because, you know, we've gotten some large pieces. For instance, Ted Waddell did a very large painting for us this year, and we haven't had that in several years. And you'll see some of the other artworks that have come in, even the 100% donations, some of them are quite large. So they could be your key focal point piece in your house.
The Kevin Redstar is a large piece, I know. It's a beautiful piece. It was in the Montana Triennial.
That's correct.
Recently, that was at the Art Museum.
Yes, and we're very excited to have that piece back, I mean, because it was one of the public favorites when it was in the show.
That triennial is pretty cool. It came to Billings for the first time after several years being in Missoula, so it was nice to have it here.
So, of course, it makes me wonder, the Montana Triennial, the art auction show. And I want to remind the audience that you don't need to just go to the art auction the night of buying. So the auction is open. So people can go and see all the work in the live auction and silent auction right now.
Correct.
But what's coming up?
We have lots of things coming up. In fact, later this year, we have, right after the auction, Michel DeRoche, who I mentioned is in the silent auction as 100% donation. He will have a full exhibition in the Montana Gallery following the art auction, along with Sharon Kagan's work, which is String Theory. So we'll have a mixed media show along with a painting show. And then right after that, we will be doing a black and white photography show by Clyde Butcher. He was one of Amazon Adams Prize students. And we're pairing that with a new exhibition. It's a call to artists, which is nationwide, and that's going to be titled North by Northwest, because we're hoping the Billings Cultural Partnership will put together a whole event for Billings for about 2 weeks called North by Northwest. And then later this fall, we'll be doing a Montana Master Series, including Bill Stockton. And we're calling that show East Meets West, because he will be paired with Jill Kultrick, who is a New York City-based artist.
North by Northwest.
Yes.
I do believe you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. I mean, we're hoping that this will be something we can continue on year after year and really do what South by Southwest was to Austin and do North by Northwest in Billings.
One of the impetuses for doing that, I don't know if people know, but the TBEX conference is coming to Billings for the first time. TBEX is Travel Bloggers Exchange. So there will be 600 people that really only write for blog sites, websites, coming to Billings. So these are writers that cover cultural, social, historic, all kinds of different things. But it's going to be right here in Billings in September.
That's right. And that's why we're taking advantage of this opportunity.
Smarties, I hopefully will drive some more eyeballs to our beautiful city and our arts organizations that are doing such great work. Brian Nicely, so nice to have you in the YPR studios.
Thank you.
Billings Symphony's new executive director, Ignacio Barón Villela, has just moved to Billings to take helm of this venerable music institution. Ignacio shares his vision for the future.
Now, you were previously in California. You had completed your MBA at the University of Southern California, and you were working in orchestra management. And this is how the Billings Symphony came to your radar.
Exactly. Well, in my time in Los Angeles, apart from completing studies in business, I had the opportunity to join a very great course in orchestra management, which is organized by the League of American Orchestras on a yearly basis. And I was lucky to be selected as part of this course, and that really opens the doors for me to explore opportunities in the music field in America. And that's how I got to know this exciting opportunity in Billings and the Billings Symphony.
Were you a little wary, maybe, of coming to a small town, Billings, Montana? I know that your city, which you grew up in, is 800,000. Then you lived in, you know, California, Los Angeles.
Germany, yeah. Big cities.
Yeah, and we're, you know, a little over 100,000. Were you a little nervous about coming out west?
Right, I'm glad you actually asked this question because, you know, through the interview process and also talking to my friends and my family, everyone was saying the same. Well, I left Spain 10 years ago, and I lived 4 years in UK, and I lived 4 years in Germany. And I had the pleasure to explore and experience different living styles with bigger and smaller cities. So I was actually open for change. And you said, I mean, living in California, living in Los Angeles is a big thing. And I was mentioning the other day, sometimes it's even too much.
Bit hectic.
Yeah, hectic. I was saying, I was spending too much time in the car.
Yes.
And such a pleasure to come to the studio today from the office, just less than 10 minutes drive.
Yeah, and it's nice to be centrally located for sure.
Exactly. So the change for me, you know, was always an option. And I, after 3 weeks in Billings, I'm really happy, actually. It's such a great city to be.
Now, Ignacio, you have such a fascinating background. You were an engineer. You worked in alternative power, I believe, for quite a few years. You have a musical background. You grew up loving the cello, playing it from the age of 7 on. How did these two worlds come together to lead you into symphonic management?
Right, everything starts when I was a child. My parents brought me the music even before I was born.
Now, were they involved in playing music, or were they just lovers and appreciators of music?
I think both. My father has been playing for a long time different instruments, but my mother also comes from a family of musicians. My grandmother used to be an opera singer. And the way my parents were got together was through music anyway. So in a way, I've been breathing music. But let me say, when I was 5 years old, I was lucky to receive a cello in my hands. And I remember...
I hope it was a small cello.
It was really small. You won't believe it, but if you go to my hometown, my mother still keeps that in the room. It's such a funny thing to see how small it was.
So as you grew, the instruments got larger as
yes,
well.
Yes, yes. Which give us some perspective on, what is life. But so I enjoy as a kid playing music. And just when I was 18 years old, I got kind of a question in my life. Do I really want to spend the rest of my life purely playing music? And I enjoy doing that, but I had something was telling me you have to do something else. And I was always really curious about how things work, about science, about finding, the understanding on different elements. And I was good at math. I was good at science in the school. So I decided to go for an engineering degree. And I focused in the energy sector. This is correct. So I worked for over 7 years in a multinational company in the energy field. Taking different roles as a consultant, supporting renewable energy projects, but also I work in the conventional side, so I had the chance to see both worlds. But anyway, that was for me a great opportunity to see how the corporate and the business world works. And because I love music, I never stopped being in touch with music. So on the evenings, part-time, I was always playing in orchestras, Spain, UK, Germany. And that was my second life. So I was enjoying so much playing with orchestras that at some point, this little question on could you do that full time was coming to me. Mm-hmm. And at some point, I got involved with orchestra management part time. That was back in Germany.
You almost need to be an engineer because you're dealing with all the symphony players. You're dealing with budgets, venues.
Patrons.
Guest artists, patrons. Right. There's a lot of parts to juggle. So I think maybe an engineer background is a perfect thing for a theater manager.
Yeah, that sounds like a logical way to go. And how important, too, was then your performance background when entering into management, having that knowledge that a cellist would have of what it's like to be a performer, for instance.
And it's so important to be familiar on the industry itself. So if you've been playing an orchestra, you know what are the main concerns, the main challenges of a musician, what are the musician needs. And in this field, we need management with understanding of what is music and what is the power of music and what music brings to our life. And the feeling of a musician, I can tell, being able to play in an orchestra is such a great thing. And what I want is that every of my players keep that feeling. That's something that every single manager in the field should keep, because we rely on them and they are so important to us. So I had the pleasure to be in that side as well.
So you are coming into the middle of the season for the Billings Symphony, and Anne Harrigan, who is the conductor, had programmed the 17-18 season. So you will be taking charge sort of in the middle of that season, but then looking forward to 18-19. Do you work with Anne in terms of helping decide the programming?
Yes, it's something that we've been discussing the last weeks, and I'm so happy to have the opportunity to work with Anne. She's fantastic.
She's marvelous.
She's marvelous. Yes. The work she's been doing the last years with the symphony is incredible. And we have established a working procedure to keep a very open communication between both of us, where, I can learn from her and hopefully she can get some things from my side. And that involves cooperation because she has the artistic knowledge, but obviously I own the management of the numbers. I was really surprised she's so good with numbers, by the way. So, we can really discuss on specific topics and everything that goes with guest artists or production budget or, you know, ideas for programming for following seasons, definitely she's open to my ideas, she's open to my suggestions. And what I said to her is, I want to understand what's the background of the symphony, what has been done in the past, what has worked, and what else we can bring since we are here.
So are we going to be hearing more Ginastera, Piazzolla, De Falla, and Rodrigo with your input, I'm hoping?
Well, I hope so too. And we were discussing about the Spanish guitar and the possibilities of the Spanish guitar and how that will be accepted here. And I'm looking forward to explore Spanish repertoire for sure. And it's such an exciting opportunity, really.
It's wonderful music too.
It is.
I'm curious what some of the challenges that the Billings Symphony Orchestra and Chorale presents. I know that heading into the next season, you will be not with a house. I guess you'll be headed out of the Alberta Bear Theater, which is going into renovations, and you'll be moving over to the Lincoln Center for a year. I know that's a big challenge. What are some of the other challenges that the orchestra presents and maybe some of their great opportunities?
Right. Let me start saying that for me, a challenge is always an opportunity. So
it's both then.
It's part of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
It's how you look at things. Now, you're right. We are passing through a period of change. We are passing not only for a transition between directors in the middle of the season, but also we are changing hall. And, you know, we got very loyal subscribers. We got a very loyal audience that we need to take care of. And this is on my list of priorities. And this transition is, for me, really important. And I want to make this announcement that we will inform as much as we can on how that change is going to happen.
And my sense in Billings that the audience is very understanding, that the theater, the Alberta Bear Theater, will be closed for about a year and a half. And you're not going to lose audience members. They are going to stick with you because they love symphonic music. And they're going to be very excited to see their Billings Symphony Orchestra and Chorale in a brand new venue.
Yeah, agreed. The Alberta Bear Theater renovations are going to create a state-of-the-art house for the symphony. And I think a potential to reach new audience members. Do you have plans for how to grow the symphony in Billings?
Indeed, and it's something that we have been discussing with the team the last days. We want to create a plan for new audience development. I was just thinking, you know, in Billings, we got 117,000 people, approximately. If you look at the capacity of the hall, it's just less than 2,000. So I wonder, you know, what we could do with the rest and how we can make the music more accessible to them. And sometimes, you know, we don't need to ask people to come to the hall, but we need to bring the music to those people. And I know the orchestra is doing a fantastic job in the past with outreach programs, with community engagement, you know.
Yeah,
going
lots
to the schools.
Yep, schools, and you're in the prison program. There's a lot of smaller quartets and chamber groups from the orchestra that do work in our community.
Exactly. So it's about understanding the community needs. And for me, it's also a process to see how it works here in Billings and how music can play that role of integration, bringing hope, bringing enjoyment. And I want to make sure that they understand that the concert is not only the performance itself, it's the experience. And the experience is what's coming before the concert, during the concert, and after the concert. And that whole package presents so many possibilities, right? That I think we have a lot of things to explore here.
Certainly one of the most popular programs that the symphony does is their Symphony in the Park, in Pioneer Park in the middle of summer. And what I love about it is there's the full symphony, and they're playing maybe a little lighter sort of repertoire, but you're having symphonic music available to thousands, like 4,000 or 5,000 people on a beautiful evening. It's romantic, and yet it's also important. It's an educational element.
It is, and let me remind that we are doing this for free. Like, you know, we open this to the public, and it's a great opportunity for us to show different repertoires to different audiences to increase awareness on the symphony and the symphony role in the community. And I'm just looking forward to it. I mean, I heard so many great things. I've been looking at pictures. It's a wonderful concert experience, I would say.
And it sounds like you're planning to grow that and to bring the music out into the community even more. So we're excited to see what comes for the future of the Billings Symphony. And Ignacio, we're really happy to have you in Billings.
Thank you.
We're thrilled to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains is produced by Corby Skinner, Anna Page, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Naumann. Additional funding provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. More information on Resounds is available at ypradio.org.